Eric Wright.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. As soon as that comes up, I want to acknowledge my co-authors on this. Dr. Jacob John from the Christian Medical College in Vellore, Aruna Mulagdi. She is actually the director of the Railway Women's Empowerment AIDS Prevention Society, which I'll talk about a little bit later. Harish Jagannath, who is at the Indian Administrative Staff College of India, and Harold Corman, who works with me here in the United States. HIV in India is a serious growing problem, although I know recently there's been some debate about the prevalence rates, which the current estimate is about 0.36, which estimates to be about 2 to 3.1 million people living in India who are HIV positive. Like China, most of these folks do not know that they're HIV positive, and that's a significant problem facing the Indian government, which also has sparked the interest of a lot of international health policy folks to suggest that India is becoming the new front line or one of the new front lines of the HIV epidemic. Most of the research on this in this country has been focused on men who have sex with men, commercial sex workers, and truck drivers, and that's part of the interest here in this project to bring a new perspective on that. Why the Indian Railways? Well, the Indian Railways is actually a very interesting place. I'm a sociologist by training, and I think it's actually one of the most fascinating social institutions I've ever run into. It is a ministry within the Indian government. It is the second largest railway system in the world. It's actually the largest employer in the world of 1.6 million employees. They transport about 4.8 billion people annually. And what's really interesting for me, particularly from an HIV point of view, is it's a relatively self-contained social system that provides not only employment, but also housing and healthcare to its employees. So this population actually is guaranteed housing and healthcare, unlike other sectors of the society. And one of the most fascinating things is railway stations themselves. They're really mini cities by themselves, and they actually really are a fascinating place where lots of populations mix, and which really raises some questions about migration and the role of the Indian railway workers, which is sort of how we got started in this. The Railway Women's Empowerment and AIDS Prevention Society, REAPS for short, was established in June of 2003 with support from UNIFEM. It was actually one of the first women's focused HIV prevention efforts in the country. It's a grassroots that grew up basically by the women who worked, who were either working in the railways or spouses of railway workers. And they developed, followed Jacob John's actually model of a comprehensive multi-level community development peer education and counseling program. It's actually based in the railway hospital in Vijayawada, but they actually work up and down the lines around Vijayawada in the South Central Railway District, which is basically headquartered in Vijayawada. And what's really interesting about this is they take a very comprehensive community approach, and they work on multiple places. So one of the things that, and again, as a sociologist, has been fascinating to me, because really they try to take an informed perspective on the social organization of the railway community. So they target the work sites, most often the wagon depot and other places where the railway workers are actually working during the day. They also target railway schools, because children of railway families actually have their own separate schools. They also work out of the hospitals and health units, and each couple stops down the Rhine has a health unit by itself, in addition to having a hospital headquartered. They also work in the railway colonies. That's the residential areas they have around the, usually around specific railway stations. But there are a lot of women's groups who are organized that sort of do handicrafts as a way of earning extra money. And they actually do interventions actually as the women are working, which are also fascinating places. And they do training centers, outreach in the training centers and at the trade union meetings, all of which sort of really try to sort of touch all corners of this community. To give you a little sense about where this is, Vijayawada there is on the right-hand side near the coast. It's actually not on the coast. It's about 30 minutes inland by train. The purpose of this project was I got involved because Harish Jagannath actually was a student of mine, and so we started talking about the work that he was doing over there with the REAPS program. And he had actually spent a couple years volunteering there, and it was really kind of an interesting project to me because, again, one of the big questions in HIV prevention research is sort of trying to document sort of the bridge populations and how the networks in HIV flows through communities. And so the first thing that happened in my mind when I heard about this was social network model went off in my head, and that was sort of how I got involved in this. But we're actually developing a broad range of community-based participatory research, and this pilot study was done to augment something that was done earlier and sponsored by UNIFEM. They did basically an individual-level evaluation, and they showed actually that at the individual level, there was changes in self-reported behavior and in knowledge and in testing, which is another important result of this intervention. But what they did not really understand is the mechanisms and how the railways connected to the rest of Indian society. And so we brought to this as an opportunity to sort of do a pilot study to collect sexual network information, because one of the questions was how readily would Indian railway workers provide that information, but also to document the extent to which those sexual networks connect the railway community to communities beyond. This is our working theoretical diagram, and if you follow the train tracks, above the train tracks are what I will refer to as the railway community, and these are the folks that live within the colonies themselves and work. So it includes the railway workers themselves, their spouses, and the railway workers generally, the majority of them are male, and the spouses are majority female, but there are a few women who are in fact railway employees, but they also have their railway children. Those are the railway communities we talk about. But more importantly, and this is why the railway station there is sort of symbolically placed in the center, it connects them systematically to what we call railway-connected communities, and in particular, contract workers. And these are the porters, the food vendors, the coach and station janitors who work on the platforms. There's also platform children, orphan children who are literally living on the platforms, some as young as 5 and 6 years of age, and commercial sex workers and transportation workers, all of whom work around the railway station. And so it's a fascinating sort of nexus or node, as we would say in social network theory. We did a small survey, and this was designed in collaboration. We translated into Telugu, and then we back translated to English, and it was delivered in June 2007 by their outreach workers who work for REAPS. They collected an astonishing 3-week period, 399 surveys. These people are very industrious, I will say. And this particular analysis focuses only on the men, which includes about 310 people. Because this was a pilot, we intentionally made the survey brief. The instrument, however, included basic demographic characteristics, self-reported HIV knowledge on testing. This was trying to be consistent with the UNIFEM evaluation that had been done before, which I have some concerns about the level. We also were really interested in alcohol use, so we used the multidimensional alcohol screening test. We actually asked them the number of lifetime sexual partners. Then we gave them a brief sexual network inventory where they could nominate up to 5 partners who they had sex with over the last 12 months and then give us some descriptive information about that. I'm going to run through a few slides just to give you a sense about who these people are. The majority of these folks are around 40 years or plus years of age, which is pretty typical for the Indian railway workers because it's a very nice job and a lot of people aspire to this. People tend not to leave the railways because obviously if you leave the railways, you lose your health care and you lose your housing. So people tend to try to get into the railway system and then they're there for pretty much the rest of their lives. Largely they're married, over 77%, and most have children as well. Now, in terms of their employment, there are 3 broad classes. There's actually quite a few job descriptions here, but Class A is senior management, middle-level officers, and then technicians, fitters, and clerks represent Class C, and then Class C, gangmen, and gatemen are the Class D individuals. Now, you'll notice that most of the respondents are in Class C and D, and that's an important observation because there was kind of this operating assumption that employees who were in Class A and Class B did not have sex other than with their wives, and which was really interesting, and I had to convince the outreach workers that it was important to try and talk to them, but we didn't get very much participation either. But that was one of the reasons I was doing this pilot study. I wanted to sort of figure out how well we could work with these outreach workers, and I must say they discovered a whole lot of things that they didn't know, so we had a really lovely debriefing after we did this study. In terms of education, most had some schooling, but a few had master's degrees and bachelor's degrees, and this was in large part because as an Indian civil service job, you have to pass an exam to get into a lot of these positions. Now, alcohol use was incredibly prevalent. 82% of them reported drinking, and more importantly, 36% of those who drank actually exceeded, in some cases, far exceeded the MAS score of 6, which would indicate severe alcohol abuse. So alcohol was very prevalent, and as you'll see later in the results, very much related to some of their sexual activity as well. About 89% reported they knew about STDs, and 95% about HIV. And here's one interesting thing, and that's 47.1% of them said that they had been tested for HIV. This is very, very high compared to other studies that have been focused on the Indian general population. And we also found not only the testing was high, but we also found a 10% positive rate in this sample. Again, it's a convenient sample, so it's not a good basis to comparison, but that number by itself represents a pretty extraordinary difference between the overall Indian population. Religion, largely Hindus, and most of them reported being heterosexual. We did have a few that reported bisexual and a couple that reported being homosexual. There is a little error here that one should be a zero. They're all off by one. But basically, this is the distribution of those who had sexual partners over the period of time. And so the average person reported having two partners in the last year. 8.9% reported not being sexually active at all. So it's a very sexually active population. And actually, this corresponds corresponds fairly closely to other countries' survey population. We usually have about 10% who are not sexually active. 48, almost half, just barely half, have reported only one partner in the past year. So that means the rest of the sample actually reported having multiple partners, and as you can see, some of them had quite a few partners. When we actually tried to sort of figure out what was the likelihood of somebody being sexually active, we did some analysis here, and again, some of the stereotype was sort of borne out. Again, this may be a function of the sampling, but you'll notice employee groups, employees in groups D and C were the most likely to be sexually active. Again, we had fewest numbers in A and B. But what's interesting here is also the knowledge of HIV and STD was correlated with more like greater likelihood of being sexually active in the past year. As was a number of children, and HIV positive was actually sort of, as alluded in the previous presentation, somewhat protective in terms of being sexually active. Those who were HIV positive were less likely, and those who were more educated were less likely. The italics here suggest significant at the 0.10 as opposed to the 0.05 level. When we looked in more detail about their sexual partners, those 310 men identified 532 sexual partners, 92% of whom were female. The average age was, if you remember, the average age of the sample is 40, so most of the partners are on average younger, about 34 years of age. And the plurality, at least, were their spouses, 41.5%. 15% friends, coworkers, or colleagues, 13.2% commercial sex workers, and 10.9% mistresses. Now, I need to make a comment about mistresses. We discovered in the course of doing this research that many of these men had essentially what are called second setups. These were essentially women who functioned as a second wife that were usually at a different place down the railway. So the men were actually on the railway for 3 or 4 days, usually at a time. So they would rest at the second, wherever they had their second setup. And that woman who lived in that particular place was supported by the railway worker, got housing, not in the colony, outside the colony, but the railway worker paid for her housing and then essentially visited her. And when he was there, he was supposed to act as if that was his wife and she was monogamous with him. When he left town, she would actually be engaged in commercial sex work. So the rate of commercial sex work actually is coded here. And so we counted second setup wives or second wives as mistresses here, just per the purpose of, because that the one of the things, this again being collaborative participatory research, a lot of the REAPS outworks workers were adamant that they were mistresses as opposed to sort of second wives. They were sort of very clear about that. So. In terms of their, this is just a histogram of the categories here, but again you'll see that the majority of them are sort of other relationships other than spouse, which indicates something. In terms of the number of partners, the significant predictors here are consume alcohol, which was strongly related, the number of kids, actually, interestingly, which we think might be sort of related to age as well, the fact that the older were less likely to be have fewer more partners, but and then homosexual bisexual identity, which was really interesting because it was very much, it's a very stigmatized thing in India. Homosexuality is punishable by imprisonment, life imprisonment. And interestingly, when I was there, actually, there was a bust of a gay bar in Delhi, and I was shocked when they rounded up 250 guys and off they went to jail for the rest of their lives, presumably. And then age is also a major, at the 0.10, reduces the likelihood of sexual activity. And then IV drug use, which we did not hear about. I actually wanted them to probe more about that. And this population was largely alcohol. IV drugs was not as prevalent as I would have expected. Given this population. Now, in terms of this, a lot of information here, but the main take-home message here is we're trying to compare the sexual partners in terms of what kinds of sexual activities they are engaging in. And you'll notice the larger percentage is in the other column, which basically suggests that, in fact, in terms of sexual activity, they're engaging in a lot more varied sexual behavior with their outside partners as opposed to their spouses. And this is an important piece of information here, which actually also suggests, as we all know, that this might actually have more routes of transmission of HIV that might increase the likelihood of HIV transmission. In terms of the types of use of condoms, you notice here that, in fact, with wives, 84.6% reported never, the respondent, that is, the male respondent, reported never using condoms with their wife in 84.6% of the time, and about and only 45.6% with their other spouses or other sexual partners, which would kind of suggest that there's a tacit awareness or concern, perhaps, about bringing HIV home. And in fact, actually, the REAPS organization was founded in part because there was a lot of women who were turning up HIV positive because they didn't know, they were just being their normal wives and taking care of themselves, and then they were turning up HIV positive. And that's what prompted them to sort of form this grassroots organization. In terms of, now we asked each of the respondents to describe the partner's risk behaviors as well. This is often a common sort of technique in egocentric sexual network research. But we asked them to sort of look at this. And again, you'll notice the spouse column there is the spouses largely are in reporting no risk behaviors with a eight women or eight partners. Can't remember if those are all women or not, but eight partners actually reported having multiple sex partners. So that meant the railway worker knew that their partner was having their spouse was having more outside sex. So that was kind of interesting insight. But if you look at the other column, you'll notice that 40% of them reported knowing that their partners were having sex with other people. Again, this could be that the second set of wives, the husbands knew what was going on there. But we also had a large number of people reporting, surprisingly, men who have sex with men as well. And then 15% or 26% reported as commercial sex work. So when you think about our theoretical diagram, it's clear, in fact, in many ways, that the connections that the railway workers are bringing to this situation are connecting them to commercial sex workers, men who have sex with men, other groups that are known already as being at high risk for HIV transmission. So in summary, it's clear that the male Indian railway workers are engaging in high rates of high-risk sexual behavior, and they have sexual networks that connect themselves to and their spouses and children. And that's important because another thing that happened that led to the founding of REAPS was a lot of children who were turning up HIV positive. The women discovered that they were HIV positive only after their child was tested for HIV because they had health problems when they were born. But includes CSWs, MSMs, IBDUs, and partners with multiple partners, which again would suggest that this is a really significant bridge population. Most of the risk seems to be concentrated in the Class D employees who abuse alcohol and to some extent IV drugs, although that's not as prevalent as the alcohol, certainly. So clearly our conclusion here is that this represents a really important bridge population, and when you think about the railway workers are on the road virtually almost 7 days a week somewhere, that they're a highly mobile population, and this is a surprise to me that no one's paid much attention to this, although when we went to the Indian Railways Ministry, it was really interesting. The director of the health services section of the railways was really willing to talk about this because he was very much concerned about the actual growing healthcare costs that are going to result in this, so he was trying to convey the need to sort of attend to this. And that one of the other pieces, which is the sideline, is the REAP strategy does seem to work, and I would argue that it's working because it's a comprehensive community-based approach. So really tackling the different nodes in that network system. But I still think that more research is needed on the Indian railway workers.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Again, we'll hold our questions to the end, and we'll go right ahead into the next presentation from